All right, anyway, my name's Jimmy. I'm the pastor of First Baptist Church of West Palm Beach. I told you guys yesterday, my wife and I, Kristen, we've been married for 17 years. We have 8 children. Our oldest is 15. He's James. I was just talking to him on the telephone. Our second son, Daniel, is 13. Jeremiah is 12. Isaac is 10. Stephen is 8. Anna Kate is 6. Mary Claire is 4. And Caleb is 2. And so we have a spectrum of children, so we're in the middle of trying to parent younger teenagers. And like I told you, some of you guys have been further down the road or are further down the road as parents than we are. And so I get asked to teach parenting a lot, different places, I guess just because we have a lot of kids. And I do feel like I can confidently help people up to age 10. I mean that. And so I'm really pretty confident in that. I think I know what to do to help kids sleep all night. I know what to do to how to spank them when they're little. I know how to spank them when they're big. I know how to talk. I really think I have some skills and some things I've learned. Beyond that, I promise you I have no idea what I'm doing. I know that I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm trying to talk to people who've been where I haven't been yet and trying to learn and trying to remember what my parents did with me because I think they're really good parents. And, you know, what do I know? I have been a student pastor. Worked with students since I was 19, became a student pastor when I was 23, and so I did student ministry work, oversaw student ministry for, I guess, from 1993 I became a youth pastor until 2008 I oversaw student ministry. I served in a small church for 1 year when I was in seminary here, First Baptist Church of Shepherdsville, Kentucky. Had a youth group of about 20 or 30. Was a youth pastor of an inner city youth group in Evansville, Indiana at Grace Baptist Church. And we had a youth group of about, 100. And then I came to Highview Baptist Church here in town. It's a large multi-campus church here. And I was a student pastor there when I came. And then over the years, our church grew, responsibilities changed. We went multi-campus, all these different things happened. I became a teaching pastor. But the whole time, I stayed hands-on and oversaw the student ministry. So what I've tried to do is really be a student of parenting, really a student of teenage culture. I did a master's degree and a PhD studying global culture of young people. And so I really try to make a study of it. And of course, now I'm in it as a parent. I will tell you that I've had literally thousands of students come through our student ministries. I've sat with literally hundreds and hundreds of parents in my office talking about teenage parenting, and it's a huge challenge. And so I've made a study of it, but I haven't successfully completed it. All right, with that as my disclaimer, I'm going to share with you some things today that I've been thinking about for many years, things that I've really thought about and studied on. It might help you think about maybe some things as you parent teenagers, as you influence those who parent teenagers, and I'm hoping it'll be an encouragement to you. But I want to pray first, then I want to get into our talk, and then at the end we'll do a little Q&A if you guys want to talk a little bit, and we will be out promptly at 2 o'clock. And then if anybody wants to hang around for a few minutes after that, I'm happy to do it. But I know you got places to go and want to hear Russell and we're going to hear Russell preach. Okay, and Russell Moore is one of my best friends. I think he's one of the best preachers anywhere. So let me pray with you and we'll do our thing. God, thank you for the opportunity to gather, to think about what life is really like. I thank you that the Bible speaks to us about life as it really is. And I thank you that the gospel applies to life as it really is. God, I pray that as we try to unpack the gospel and flesh out the gospel and apply the gospel to parenting teenagers, that you'd give us great wisdom, that you would make this a profitable time, not a waste of time. And I pray that you would spark in all of us, by the Holy Spirit, spiritual thoughts and spiritual minds, so that we can have the mind and the heart of Christ on this important matter, this challenging matter. And God, I pray against the devil, who's like a roaring lion, who wants to destroy our teenagers and our homes and our parents and our churches and destroy us. He wants to eat us up. And God, I pray that you would defend us. I pray that you would help us to stand. I pray that you would give us a Holy Spirit gospel power to stand, to understand the devil's schemes, to avoid those schemes, to overcome those schemes, so that we can be the men and women, husbands and wives, moms and dads, pastors, youth workers, volunteers you want us to be. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, I want to talk to you about this. This is how I got interested in the secret world of. This is the secret world of teenagers. If you think this is how to do family devotions, I gave up on that because I'm not very good at it. So we're doing the secret world again. So if you thought it was something else and you want to leave, you can. All right, this is like this plane is going to Houston, right? Okay. So when I first became a student pastor, I would have all of these parents come sit in my office, and this would be a typical conversation. I probably had scores of these conversations when I first became a student pastor. They come sit in my office, and they began, particularly the mom would begin to tear up and weep a little bit, and the mom would say, okay, Brother Jimmy, here's what happened. My daughter went to the mall, and I probably shouldn't have, but I went in her room, and I've been concerned about her, and I started looking through her stuff, and I got in her backpack, and I looked in the backpack, and there were all these notes in the backpack. Remember, 1993, okay, no cell phones. Most people didn't even have computers in their home. The internet was not accessible to most people. People wrote notes. Remember, you used to write them when you're in school and fold them up funny? Okay, they had these notes. And she'd say, I read these notes, and these notes, there was language in there that I just can't believe my daughter would use. And she and her friends are talking about things that I had no idea she was involved in. And there's all these, this horrible, I don't even know who this person is. And I can't believe it's my daughter. And now I've violated her privacy. I don't want to admit that I did that. But now I've found out some things that are going on in her life that I didn't know were going on. And what do I do? How do I handle this? And what happened is that mom and that dad had an idea of who their daughter was. But when they went into that backpack and began to read those notes, they got a glimpse into their daughter's secret world. And the truth is, teenagers have always had a secret world. Always. And the truth is, all of us have a secret world. There's a part of us that we don't share with anybody else. There are thoughts, there are desires, there are fantasies, there are dreams, there are moments internally, inside of us, in our minds, in our hearts, that we just don't share with anybody else. And everybody has a secret world to some degree. When Ma and Pa Ingalls were riding across the prairie in the covered wagon, the teenagers then had a secret world too. There are things that they did and places that they went and conversations that they had that their parents did not know about. They had a secret world. When you were a kid, you had a secret world. And the kids in our churches, the kids in our homes, they have secret world as well. Periodically, I have a mom or a dad will say, now, Pastor, my son is my best friend. And he tells me everything, and I mean everything. Or a mom will say, my daughter and I have such a close relationship. She doesn't keep any secrets from me. She tells me everything. That is very naive. That is extremely naive. I promise you, your daughter, your son does not tell you everything. I promise you they don't tell you everything. Okay? They don't. Do you tell anybody everything? No, you don't. Okay? They have a secret world. Now, you may have a really close relationship with them, and they may tell you a lot. But they don't tell you everything. Okay? The secret world is real. Now, let me tell you kind of how this secret world developed. And I want to show you a little acrostic that I've just developed over the years. It's a simple little kind of an equation. These kind of things help me to think about what's going on. And that's this. Affluence plus technology plus autonomy equals the secret world. Okay? Affluence plus technology plus autonomy equals the secret world. You know how an equation works. When you have an equation with an equal sign in the middle, if there is more of, if you add something to one side, what do you have to do to the other to make it equal? You have to add something to the other side, right? So if this side gets bigger, this side gets bigger. That's the way the secret world is. The more affluence, technology, and autonomy that a teenager has in their life, the larger and more dangerous the secret world is for them. The more affluence, the more technology, the more autonomy a teenager has in their life, the larger and the more dangerous, the greater capacity for a more dangerous secret world exists for them. And so these are the factors that I would say tend to exacerbate the secret world. Now, I want you to think about this. Let's talk about affluence for a second, because some of you might say, well, Pastor, we're in a terrible economy. The kids of the families in my church are not affluent at all, and I'm not affluent at all. That may be so, but I'm going to tell you right now, in the global scale, in the historic, in all of world history, all of us are extremely affluent. teenagers in this country spend and influence tens of billions of dollars. It's estimated that they influence or spend personally over $60 billion every year in the United States of America. Teenagers have money. The teenagers in your home have access to money. The teenagers in my home have access to money. Even teenagers influence how their parents spend money. Have you ever noticed how they market products to adults? They make the products look cool to teenagers because they know that even if you're marketing a minivan, you need to make the minivan and make an MTV-style commercial for the minivan because the teenagers are going to help, even though it's dorky, you're going to help mom pick out the coolest minivan they possibly can. Okay, that's how they market computers. That's how they market television sets. That's how they market a lot of products. They're marketed directly to teenagers because they know the teenagers influence the spending habits of the parents. And then the teenagers have money themselves. They have jobs, so they have all kinds of affluence and all kinds of money. The more affluence you have, the more it adds to your capacity for a dangerous secret world. Let's talk about technology and think about how that's developed. Do any of you have a hardcore fundamentalist, serious, independent Baptist, like hardcore roots like that? Anybody? I do. Anybody have roots like that? Nobody? You do? Okay. Then you might know what I'm talking about. Back in the 70s, when I was a little kid, the preachers used to preach hard against rock music. You remember that? They would preach hard against secular rock music, that drive and beat and that backwards masking, you know, and all the drugs and all the demons. And they just preach hard, man. Nobody, you don't listen to that stuff. In fact, in some of our churches, and I remember this in my church, they had a record burning one time. I don't know if you've ever attended a record burning, but they did. They got all the people to bring their secular rock music records to church, and they put them in a trash barrel and lit them on fire and burned them up. And I think they were waiting. I think they thought demons were going to shoot out of there like Ghostbusters or something. It didn't. But they burned the records. And so the answer in the 70s to technology, you know, you have records. It's relatively tame technology. I guess you had 8-track tapes briefly, but they burned that stuff. So we're gonna say no to that. Well, then when it came to music in the 80s, it got a little more sophisticated. And so we began to copy secular rock music. And so they had Christian rock music trying to imitate secular rock music to varying degrees of success. And so our answer in the 80s in student ministry was, which is when I was a teenager, they would say, no, don't listen to that secular rock. You can listen to this. It's just as good. Only that was a lie, wasn't it? Okay, because it wasn't as good. Okay, but they would say that it's just as good. You have to have the little, they used to have a little chart in the Christian bookstore, like, if your kid likes this, they might like this. Okay, so you can listen to, so, you know, whatever. So they would say that, and so they would try to, you know, don't listen to that, listen to this. And then we'd say to teenagers, got the late 80s, early 90s, we began to get a little more sophisticated, so we'd say, no, you know what we really need to do is work with our kids on this music thing, so why don't we just listen to it with our kids, and let's keep track, and let's really try to get involved with what our kids are listening to. Instead of saying, don't listen to it, and burn the records and all that, let's acknowledge they do listen to secular music, and a lot of the Christian groups that got halfway good crossed over anyway, so you couldn't tell the difference. So why don't we just look at... let's just look at what they... So we tell them, you know, get your cassette tapes out. In the jackets of the cassette tapes, they have the lyrics there. And get that out. Parent, moms, and dads, read what your kids are listening to. And they had CDs. You know, get out the CD jacket and read the lyrics on the inside so you know what your kids are listening to. And that was kind of an approach. But then we got in the late 90s and the early zeros, and what happened? CDs anymore? No, it all went digital. So all of a sudden, Apple comes out with the iPod, and it changed the whole world, even for parents. I don't know if you realize that, but as a parent, that changed your world, because even if your kid had a very extensive cassette tape or CD collection, it was a defined collection. You could go and find it. You could look on the outside of the CD cover and see what it was. Even if they had 200 CDs in one of those big towers, you could at least kind of look at what it was and pull them out and check it out. But now all of a sudden, your kid's music collection fits in their pocket. And now it's up to 10,000 songs, and they can change it in a matter of minutes every day. And they can trade songs and download new ones and unload them and upload them, and they can do all of these things. And if they don't want you to know what something is, they can even mislabel it so that when you look on there, it says, you know, Elvis, Great Hymns of the Past, and actually, you know, it's something else that you don't want your kids to listen to. And then it got even a little more sophisticated because they had video iPod then, and you could download movies and you could download video clips and television shows. And then they really hit the mother lode when they came out with the phone, because now you can text and call and get on the internet and have videos and have TV shows and have songs, and there's virtually no possible way a parent can track or be involved with or even really know for sure what kind of things children are watching or listening to. Technology is so powerful. Now, you can't dispute this. When they were at Little House on the Prairie, what was their music? Yeah, when Paul played the fiddle at night, right? Okay, so they pretty much knew what they were listening to or what they heard at church, or the kids might learn some song at school or something, okay? When you were a kid, it was a record album, it was an 8-track tape, but hey, it was defined somewhere. I mean, even pornography. I mean, I'm thankful, honestly, that I was out of college before the internet really went mainstream, because when I was a kid, if I wanted to look at pornography, somebody had to actually have like a real magazine that could get you in trouble, okay? Because if somebody found out you had it, you're in problem. Okay, but now, when they want to look at pornography, the only thing they have to do is when mom or dad walk in the room, click the X, it's gone. So we have a whole different world now, and technology has exponentially increased the capacity and the danger of the secret world for teenagers. Okay, just exponentially increased. I remember when I was a youth pastor in the late 90s, here in Louisville, we had a pretty straight-laced group of kids in our youth group. I mean, Christian school and homeschool kids, they came from what I call focus on the family style families. You know what I mean? They read James Dobson books. I'm talking about intact, often single income, their biological children, church, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, youth group, kids camp, mission trips. I mean, I'm talking focus on the families. And we had a bunch of 6th and 7th graders, and we busted a porn ring. They had all set up these fake email addresses on hotmail.com, and they were emailing porn to each other, 6th and 7th graders, boys and girls. Every one of them, intact, focused on the family style family, Christian school, homeschool kids, beautiful children, but they had gotten into this stuff, and this is what they were doing. I remember a few years later, when kids all had cell phones, he was an 11th grader, and he another, just super kid, super family, and another family in our church, same deal. And their parents were just blown out of the water when they figured out that this boy and this girl had been texting naked pictures of each other back and forth at night before they went to bed. And so all of this technology just incredibly increases the capacity for the secret world. And let's even think about computers. I mean, you remember when in the 90s when everybody started getting computers in their home, and so we used to do seminars for parents about, and here's what you got to do to control technology in your home, and I still think these are good guidelines, by the way. Don't put a TV in your kid's room. Don't put VCRs in your kid's room. Don't put a computer in your kid's room. Put a computer, TVs, those kind of things in a central area where everybody can see what's going on. Put software on. Remember we used to market the software at church for the software people. You guys all got to get software on your computer because your kids are going to look at porn. You got to put software on your computers. And so we tell them, we have, you know, be safe, safe eyes online, and covenant eyes. We have all these things. And I still think those are all great things, and you ought to have it because you have computers, you ought to have it. But, I mean, really, the kids' computer's in their pocket. The kids' computer's in their pocket. Anywhere they can get to a Wi-Fi site, which is like any McDonald's, any Starbucks, any library, their school, their church, Southern Seminary's campus, they can get online and look up and find anything that they want. And so it's a dangerous, dangerous secret world. Expanded technology makes it almost impossible. It makes it so impossible, and it's not, pornography isn't the only thing, but it's a big thing. And so the men, and I don't want the ladies in this room to get too uncomfortable, but I will just tell you, I was a dean at Boyce College. I've taught at Southern Seminary at every level, undergraduate, graduate, master's, doctoral level. I've been a youth pastor of a large church, thousands of kids, college students, all this stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, basically, every kid under 30 has never known life without the internet, and every kid, every boy under 30, almost 100%, if not 100%, has had significant exposure to pornography. All of them. Your pastors, your youth pastors, your deacon—I mean, everybody. Okay, so now some of you are in here going, "All right, well, maybe not," but it's real close to 100%. I'm not saying it's 100%. I'm saying it's real close. Okay, let me just ask you, in men, I need men to answer. I have 6 boys. Okay. How many of you guys have boys? Raise your hands if you have boys. How many boys you got? All right, that's 8, 9, 11. Who else has boys? 2, 13. Okay, it's a 16. Anybody else have boys that have missed? All right, 17. We've got 17 sons in this room, represented in this room. Our 17 sons, what do you think are the chances? I need the men to answer this question. What are the chances that those boys get to age 20 without ever seeing pornography? Huh? I think it's got to be real close to zero. My kids are homeschooled. Zero. Exactly. Those kids have their phones in their pocket at church. I would have to keep them locked in a rubber room. Okay. And I don't know, they'll probably get it there somehow. It's impossible. That is the world that we live in. Technology has so expanded the secret world and the reach of all of this music. My kids have music. I don't even know where they get it. Okay. We'll be driving. My kids are homeschooled. We have a big white family van. Okay. It looks like the government showed up when we come in. Okay. My kids know music. I don't know where they heard it. I mean, I guess they hear it on the radio or on the internet or their friend's house or at the mall. I don't know where they get it. But, I mean, we don't sit there. I mean, I'm not real anal retentive about it either. I'm like that opposed to whatever. They can listen to what they want to. I want to be discerning. I'm going to help them with it. But I'm not. It's not like we got them on lockdown. But I don't know where they hear the stuff. I mean, kids, this technology has so expanded the opportunity for them to have a secret world. It's incredible. And let's talk about autonomy. Our whole culture is teaching parents that these kids are supposed to have this very high level of personal autonomy. The whole culture, if you watch Oprah Winfrey, if you watch Jerry Springer, Dr. Phil, you watch The View, you listen to a lot of government officials, I'm telling you, they believe that your home is like a country and that your children and everyone in the home are like citizens of this country. Citizens with civil rights, rights to privacy and rights to property and rights to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness within your home. And that if you were to get too involved with what they are doing in their lives, you are like violating the In-Home Patriot Act. Okay, you are somehow doing something morally wrong, parentally suspect, and perhaps illegal if you do anything to violate the rights of these children in your home. That is not what the gospel teaches at all. The gospel has inherent in it an authority structure. It does. We pray to God. Jesus said, when you pray to God, what do you call him? The gospel has inherent in it family relationships, family partnerships. It's part of the whole package, like Ephesians 5 we talked about yesterday. Ephesians 5, it's got husbands and wives, how husbands are supposed to love their wives like Christ loved the church, and how wives are supposed to submit to their husbands, and how that's just like the mystery of how much Christ loves the church. And then part of that, out of the outflow of that, you got to realize that one day Christ is going to return, and he's going to have a perfect bride for himself. And then you got to also realize that out of the outflow of that, that's why children should obey their parents, and parents must teach them to honor their mother and father, and that's why you better not exasperate your kids. This whole thing of eschatology and the church and the gospel and marriage and parenting is all bound up together. It flows out of the gospel. And so it is a violation of God's redemptive plan for anyone to say to parents that you do not have authority over your children and the lives of your children, because the children are a stewardship for us. The stewardship responsibility of parents means we must have the authority to manage the resources of our kids and that we pour into our kids. And so most of the parents in your church, and perhaps some in this room, have been persuaded because we just feel this cultural pressure. I'm a pastor, a conservative pastor, who at times when I even have to get pretty involved and aggressive with my own kids, I almost feel like, I don't know if I should be doing that. And I think, what am I talking about? It's my house. All right? So, I mean, that is my dresser. I can see what is in my dresser that I purchased. That is my bed. I can look under the mattress anytime I want. That is my closet. I can go through the contents of my closet. That is my cell phone you're speaking on right now. And I can find out what you've said and who you've called and who you've texted. That is my computer. I own it. I can find out where you've been when you have been on my computer. That is my television set. I have a right to control what is on my, a responsibility to control what's on my television set. And so we need to understand and help parents recapture their sense of authority about their own children, their own home. Okay? Having said that, autonomy extends a little even further. It kind of goes with affluence. What is the number one tool of personal autonomy for Americans? Car. Car is a symbol of what it means to be an American. That's why a lot of people want to take away your car, make you ride a train, and walk, and ride a bicycle, because they want you to stop being a good American. Being a good American means you have a car. Okay, that's part, not everywhere, because in some cities you don't, but I mean, that's just part of who we are. It's part of American individualism. And you have a car. If you let your kids have a car, or access to a car, which most of us have had when we were kids, and most of us will do for our kids, for our own personal convenience. If you do that, and they have a car, that car is not just a mode of transportation for them. That car becomes quickly a rolling apartment, doesn't it? I mean, that car is where their life is. It's where their phone is, where their music is, where half their food is. It's where their clothes are. It's where their friends are. It's how they get where they're going. They get up 6:30 in the morning and leave to go to school. They don't come home till after they get done working or going to ball practice 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. And that car is their rolling apartment. That is their home away from home. Okay, but that car gives them a tremendous amount of autonomy, doesn't it? I remember when I was a teenager, when I was in high school, we lived in this small town in southwest Florida, Arcadia, Florida. And Arcadia is in the middle of nowhere. And if we wanted to go on a date or go out with our friends, you had to drive an hour away to Sarasota or Fort Myers or Bradenton, Florida. And in order to get there, it's an hour drive. This is before cell phones. I don't know why we did this. I mean, our parents were good Christians and all. They just let us do it. We would load up a car 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening and get in the car and drive to wherever we were going an hour away and not come home till after midnight. And there was no cell phones, and we wouldn't even speak to our parents till we got home because, I mean, unless you stopped at a payphone, there's no way to do it. And so we were just gone. That's just total autonomy. We had money in our pocket. We had boys and girls in the car. We could go anywhere we wanted for the next 6 hours, and nobody would know. And they didn't. They know where we went or what we did unless we shared. And often that was not the entire truth, okay? And we were Christians, but still. Why? Because we had a secret world. So kids have this incredible capacity for a secret world. The more affluence, the more technology, the more autonomy, the greater and greater and the more dangerous their capacity for a secret world. Now, after uplifting you like that, I want to share with you a couple of thoughts that I have about how to get a handle on the secret world of our kids, because they do have a secret world. And you ought to just repeat that to yourself if you have kids over and over again. My kids have a secret world, my kids have a secret world, my kids have a secret world. Because it's easy to think that we're so good and we have it on lockdown and our kids have no ability to have a secret world, but that's a joke. They do. They find it. Kids and secret world are like water. It finds the lowest level. It finds the crack in the system. It finds a way. And you might say, my kid, we don't let them have this, and we don't let them do that. Again, unless you keep them in a rubber room, you take them to church where their friends have every bit of it in their pocket. I mean, unless you are literally with them 24/7 as they get older, they are going to have to operate in this world. And we're going to have to train them to do it. We can't just fortress them down and batten down the hatches. We've got to train them to do it. So here's a couple of thoughts that I have about how to deal with the secret world of our teenagers. And let me just start with this principle here. I believe that these aspects of life cannot be and should not be eliminated. No parent or church should try to say, we're going to eliminate affluence. You are affluent. It's where we live. It's what we are relative to the rest of the world. You cannot eliminate it. We're going to eliminate no more technology. Okay, well, that's dumb, right? They're going to have no autonomy. Well, that's not even biblical, because you need to be preparing them to be husbands and fathers and wives and moms. And how are you going to prepare them if they're never going to have any autonomy? I mean, they have to learn to have autonomy. That's your job as a parent. It's our job as a church. So we can't eliminate these things. What can we do? We need to manage these things. And I think that you're going to hear me use the word manage a lot. Some of you may have a reaction against the word manage, because it may sound like I'm abdicating responsibility or being soft on discipline or not drawing hard lines. I want you to know, I think these things must be managed, not eliminated, and I don't think they can be exactly controlled. I think they have to be managed. Okay? When we talk to our kids about their sexuality, you guys have probably seen the books, Every Man's Battle, Every Young Man's Battle. Okay? There's some good things in those books, but honestly, I think the whole concept is unhelpful because it implies that sexuality is a battle for young men to fight and win, that there is some kind of dragon that you can slay and emerge victorious. And any man in the room, if they're honest, would tell you that's simply just not true. I mean, have any of you completely overcome any struggles with your sexuality? Is lust a thing of your past? It's not anything that even comes to your mind anymore because by the gospel you've put it to death and it's not a problem for you? Okay. I don't think there's a man in the room saying, that's right, I haven't lusted in years. All right, that's not true. It is your sexuality is something that has to be managed. It is not something to be destroyed. God gave it to us. Okay, God wants us to use it. It's got to be managed. We are stewards of our sexuality. We are stewards of these things. We are stewards of the resources that God gives us. We are stewards of the technology that are a product of our time. We are stewards of the autonomy that God gives us and gives our children. We have to learn to manage it and to train our children to manage it. Having said that, let me just say a couple of other things. If you think about managing it, it really helps a lot of things. The second idea besides management is I think we ought to constantly be preaching and living out the gospel to our children and in front of our children. Here's what I mean. As our kids experience affluence and technology and autonomy, even though we work hard to manage it, they're going to have a secret world. And every once in a while, because of the providence of God and the work of the Spirit in the life of your child, on behalf of your child, you are going to discover, or parents in your churches are going to discover and get a glimpse into the secret world of these kids. And when that happens, our responses are very, very critical. Because our kids need to see us respond by pointing them to the gospel of Jesus when they fail. Okay, and I promise you they're going to fail. They're going to fail. They might. Hopefully they'll fail in little ways so you can make corrections and there won't be anything, consequences too disastrous. But we just said, I think we said we had 17 sons in here. I mean, we have 17 sons representing this room. Some of those 17 sons are likely to fail spectacularly in ways that embarrass them and embarrass us and change the trajectory of their whole life. That's life, isn't it? It's life in a fallen world. That's fallenness on display. And yet what the gospel says is God has a design for the lives of our children. Sin and our sins are going to, sins that we commit, sins that others commit against us, are going to create brokenness in our lives. And the gospel of Jesus lets us recover and pursue God's design from wherever we are. So what do we do when we get a glimpse into the secret world of our kids? I mean, if you find out, you know, if your son or your daughter comes to you and says, I've been having sex with my boyfriend and my girlfriend, and you had no idea, what are you going to do? I mean, if your son or daughter comes to you and says, I think I'm a homosexual, what are you going to do? If your son or your daughter comes to you and says, I'm addicted to pornography, what are you going to do? If you find out any of those things happen to be true and they never told you, what are you going to do? Are you going to curl up in the parental fetal position and call your pastor and ask him to come over and give you a hug? What are you going to do? I mean, we've got to respond with the gospel. The answer is always to point people to the gospel and to extend gospel-like mercy, grace, and love to these kids. We've got to stay in the game with the kids no matter what they do, no matter what we find out about the secret world. And I've had parents say, throw up their hand. I've watched parents in my churches wave the white flag. I've just watched them do it. They didn't want to fight with their kids anymore. It was just too hard. They kept undercovering more and more layers of nasty stuff in their kids' lives. And after a while, it got so laborious and so hard, so emotionally taxing, they just ran the white flag up and stuck their head in the sand and just kind of, let's just try to keep peace until they leave the house. And hopefully God will do something good with them. And I understand that, but we can't do that. We've got to stay in the game with our kids. We've got to stay in the game with our kids. What if our kids come to us and we figure out or they tell us that they're not even believers? What are we going to do? We're going to kick them out of that? No. We've got to stay in the game with the kids. Point them to the gospel. Our kids have to know that no matter what mom finds out, no matter what dad finds out, no matter what pastor finds out, that we are on their side. I am on your side for life. I am on your side. I am in it to win it with you. No matter what you do, if you get pregnant or get somebody pregnant, I'm not going to excuse sin or gloss over sin. We're going to deal with it, but I'm on your side. I'm in it. I love you. I'm going to extend grace and mercy to you. I want you to trust Christ. I want you to repent of your sin, and I want to see, okay, whatever you've done, whatever's happened to you, I want, okay, by the gospel of Jesus, how can we begin from here to recover and pursue God's design? And I'm going to help. I'm with you I'm with you the rest of your life. That's what we have to communicate to our children. That's what they need to hear from their church. That's what they need to hear from their youth pastor, from their youth volunteers, from their moms, from their dads. We've got to convince our parents. Many of our parents get so embarrassed by the failure of their kids that they hunker down and in their own, they're afraid that the people at church are going to find out what's happened because of the secret world of their children, and they do everything they can to protect this embarrassing information. What a tragedy that our churches have become like that. That's not the gospel. I mean, do you really think Jesus was crucified and his body was broken and he bled to death and his beard was plucked out and they punched him in the face and put the crown on the throne? You think they laid his cold, dead body in the grave in the dark with a stone over the opening? You think they did that because really we're all kind of okay and we just needed a little bit of cleanup? I mean, he died because inside we're nasty. We're disgusting. We're repugnant. We deserve nothing but judgment, death, and hell. And it's kind of easy because in some of our own lives and some of our churches, we may have, you know, if you come to my house, oh, man, look at the Scroggins, you know, the family, and mom gets to stay home, they got these kids, and they all kind of well-behaved and play sports and do good in school, and they come to youth group, and it's just kind of all-American family. It's easy for us to go, yeah, and so we've sinned, it's created brokenness, and we have to go to the gospel. It's easy for us to get prideful and ignore our own sin and be, it really is legalism, honestly. It's easy to do that and say, so when we talk about recovering and pursuing God's design, guys, we've got to talk a little nicer to each other, you know. I need to go find out what your mother's favorite color is. And we've got to have our quiet times more faithfully. And we have some little tweaks that we need to recover and pursue God's design, but we think we're already, you know, we're pretty good. All right, a lot of our families and churches feel that way, and that's just wrong. We desperately need the gospel. We deserve judgment, death, and hell for everything that we are, apart from Christ. Okay, now once we realize that, now we have really a basis for extending love and mercy unconditionally, unendingly to our children, regardless of what we find out about their secret world. And I think thinking of managing these things and thinking of how an application of the gospel flies and training our parents to think of it that way will keep us from legalism, and it'll keep us from pride, and it'll keep us from creating barriers and rules and all of these one-size-fits-all solutions for families and kids. They aren't going to work. If raising kids was a math problem, A squared plus B squared equals C squared, we'd all succeed. Okay, it's not a math problem. It's a sin problem. It's a people problem. It's infinitely complex. Only the God of the universe can unroll somebody's heart and bring them to conversion so that they can be saved by the gospel. It's infinitely complex. And so when we're talking to parents, we're thinking about our own parenting, we're thinking about our own relationships, we just have to recognize that this is really more than we can handle on our own. So it's got to be managed. We got to be gospel-focused, and we better be extremely prayerful. I mean, we can trumpet all we want, and I preach to myself on this about the sovereignty of God, but our true belief in the sovereignty of God is reflected in our prayer life. And so I really think, you know, the Bible says in the book of Revelation that God stores up prayers in golden bowls, golden vials. And if that was true for the kids in your youth group, kids in your church, kids in your home, exactly how many golden vials do you think they got up there? That's a pretty interesting question, isn't it? If God's storing the prayers of the saints in golden vials, and God walks us into the warehouse, let me show you your prayers for the kids in your home. How many vials are there? I don't know if there's that many vials. Well, then maybe we don't believe in the sovereignty of God that much after all. Well, we just believe in us. And so those are kind of three things. Now I will just say, I think creating a culture in a church where parents can be free to share about the failures of their children and their own failures. If you can create environments where that is available to parents, I think they'll do it. Because parents are dying inside, man. I mean, parenting just hurts, doesn't it? I mean, it just hurts. The wickedness in the world I send my sons over there to play sports at those public schools. I love sending them over there because we'll win them to Christ, you know. But, man, I feel like I'm sending my sons into the lion's den every day. Every day. And some of you send your kids to public schools, and some of you homeschool, and some of you Christian school, and I'm for all of it. I really am. I'm for the parents' ability to decide what is best and what is available, what the options really are for themselves and their families. My dad's a public school administrator for life. I went to public schools my whole life. So I'm pro-public schools. I'm pro-Christian schools. I'm pro-private schools. I'm pro-homeschool. We homeschool our kids. But I want you to know, man, this stuff right here, if we don't learn to manage these things in our own homes, in our churches, if we don't really focus on and teach our people to share and model and let their parenting flow from the gospel, if we don't get on our face before God and cry out to a sovereign God to help us with these things are crushing our kids, they're crushing our families, they're humiliating our parents, and they're creating an embarrassment factor to our parents to where they don't even feel like they can be a Christian. They don't even feel like they can do anything for God. And I just want to encourage you guys, for people like you, you really want to connect church and home, create some environments where parents can be real and where they can get real biblical, gospel-centered counsel and encouragement from other parents, because this right here is not going to go away. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Okay? But the gospel of Jesus is the answer, isn't it? I mean, the gospel is the answer, that the gospel lets us recover and pursue God's design no matter what mistakes we've made, no matter what sins we've committed. That's just what the gospel is. True for us, true for our kids. I'll ask some questions. Anybody have any questions? Anybody want to interact with that at all? Yes, ma'am. That's a great question. One of the things is when you manage affluence, I'll say this. You can't remove affluence. What time is it? Because I don't want to go over. 12 minutes? Okay. Will you tell me when it, time is? All right. When you manage affluence, I'll just say this. You can't take money. You know, some people tell me all the time, well, my son, you know, I can't. My son works for his own insurance, so he thinks he has the right to drive the car. My son pays his own car payments, whatever. Look, your son, your daughter owes you money if that's how you're going to do it. You can control, you can manage what they do with their money. Even if they're incredibly entrepreneurial, even if they make thousands of dollars doing something really neat, you can help them manage their money as long as they're a minor and they live in your house. So even if you say to them, listen, I appreciate the fact that you make all that money. That is brilliant. It's awesome. It's going to do really good for you one day when you can get it out of that savings account I just put it into. So you can help them manage their affluence. You can help them. You do not have to give them an unlimited supply of money. You don't have to buy them everything they want. You don't have to let them buy money with everything that they make. You can help them manage it. There's a reason that when God made Adam and Eve in the garden, he didn't make children and tell them to grow up and give them, you know, find parents. He made adults and told them to make children, because God knows that children need the guidance and help with parents. Parents need to help their kids manage this stuff, or the kids can't do it on their own. Okay, same for technology. You know, again, just the basic stuff. Like my kids have cell phones, some of them, older ones. But what we've chosen to do is, you know, I don't let them have, they can't text pictures and they don't have internet on their phone. So they can text and call, that's all they can do. But there's even pitfalls to that. I'm not 100% sure every kid needs a cell phone, including mine that have them, but they do. But every parent has to decide what they need, what they want to do. It's got to be managed. You know, again, I don't let them take computers or phones up into their rooms at all. All phones and computers have to stay in the living room. If they want to talk to somebody privately, they can certainly step outside or whatever. It's not like I don't want to have conversation. I don't really want to listen to them. They talk too loud. But even those things aren't going to, you can't lock it down. Because if they go to church, the kids there have it all. If they go to someone's house, even the best Christians in the world, they've got it all. If they go to ball practice, if they go to Cub Scouts, if they go to ballet practice, it's all around. This is the world. And so even when I send my son in the lion's den to go play football, you know, sometimes my wife will say, man, I don't know. I'm going to go over there. All kinds of things happen in that locker room. What if somebody shows him pornography with this? I'm like, look, this is the world. This is the world that we live in. It is fallen. All of those boys have to learn to live in this world. This is the world. You know, we're not going to let them watch TV because they have commercials on there and girls have bikinis. We live in Florida. They wear bikinis to the mall. Okay? I mean, this is the world. We've got to teach our kids how to manage their sexuality, how to manage their thoughts, how to manage their relationships. And I promise you, they're going to fall. If we're going to let them live in this world, they're going to fail. They're going to fall. And that's why the gospel has to be so central, because you have to keep going back and saying, okay, now, you really screwed up here, and I appreciate the fact that you want to repent, and here's what we're going to do. Here are the consequences. But now, look, Christ is going to redeem this, and how can we recover and pursue God's design from here? And that's got to be the question you're constantly asking. So technology, I'd manage that, limit, try to do the best I can, stay on top of what movies they're going to see, control television in our home. We don't allow technology in their rooms. We try to manage where they go the best we can, but knowing that this is the world we live in. And honestly, I'm just resigned to it. They've got to learn by the power of the Spirit to live in this world. And I can't take them out of the world. Jesus even said not to do that. You live in the world. The world's going to hate you because they hated Jesus first. So that's it. And then it comes to autonomy. I'm just very assertive about my authority in the home. And my wife, I don't mean like I'm not, not like that. I just mean my wife and I both have great authority as the mom and the dad. Their job from God is to honor their mother and their father and obey their mom and dad. And God tells them to do that. I don't even have to tell them. God tells them to do it. So asserting our own authority, not being afraid to exercise our authority. The other thing is, some of you guys have seen the illustration of the funnel. Most parents start with the funnel, the wrong side up. Most parents start by giving kids massive freedom, and then as they fail, we narrow their opportunity to be free until we get it down. We really put the squeeze on them. Okay, that's totally wrong. It would be much more effective to flip the funnel and start with very little freedom, and then as they show maturity and the ability to manage these different aspects on their own, give them more and more management responsibilities. Okay, so that would be a major philosophical way I would think about it. If you start with tons of freedom, I just go tell you, just go ahead and start narrowing it down, because they're sinners and they're going to sin like crazy, and you're going to give them a huge opportunity to sin like crazy. So just go ahead and make your plans. I would much rather start here, and as they earn and demonstrate maturity and ability to manage different aspects, they learn to manage their money better, then guess what? I give them control over more money. They learn to manage technology better, I give them access and management over more technology. They learn to manage their time better and autonomy better, make good choices. They get more and more freedom to manage these things on their own. Even though I know even then they're still going to have bumps in the road, they're going to make mistakes, they're going to mess up, they're going to sin, and they're going to lie, they're going to go the wrong spot, they're going to have the wrong friend, they're going to do what I told them not to do, they're not going to do what I told them to do. I know that because they're sinners. My wife, sinful woman, me, sinful man, got together, made a bunch of little sinners. And they're running around sinning all over the place. So are we. So we've got to help them manage that. So those are just some thoughts. Yes, sir. Yeah. 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 I mean, all you can do is tell them and try to get them ready. But I'll tell you another thing that would really help you, because I've been a youth pastor since I was 23, which, again, I think is completely insane in retrospect. But I really don't want a 23-year-old youth pastor at my church. I really want like a 45-year-old youth pastor, truthfully. But anyway, it's hard to find them. But anyway, I think one of the best things you can do is get parents who've walked in those moccasins in those times to communicate that to parents for you. If you try to stand up as a 20-year-old with a preschooler or no kids and start preaching to everybody about what they all do with their teenagers, they're just going to be like, oh, come on. Come on. But you can have someone who has teenagers or who has already successfully has grown children, teenage grandchildren, you can let them get up and talk about it. And they can. And, some of them aren't as tech savvy, so maybe you do some of the tech stuff and let them do some of the, hey, here's what y'all need to do as parents stuff. I know what I used to do. We used to do parenting seminars before we had connecting church and home conferences in the mid-90s. And I was 25, 26. I was a PhD student. And what I would do is get up and do a Bible study on family and home and our minds and parental authority. And then I would have deacons and other parents stand up and actually talk about the parenting. Because I was well-equipped to teach the Bible, but I was not well-equipped to instruct parents of teenagers on how to parent teenagers. So So there's ways you can bring some other godly people into the conversation. I think it'll make it a whole lot more effective. All right. Anybody else? One more before we go. Or none more. All right. Yes, ma'am. The secret world?
No.
Responsibility?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely stop them.
Yeah, and
it should. Yeah. Great question. You know, again, since I've not walked in your moccasins, but I would just make a recommendation to you. And again, having not been there, but having worked with hundreds of moms and dads who haven't talked to them and studied it, I think you can. It's a manage. Again, I think the word manage really helps, because management is not a one-size-fits-all concept. And you and your husband and your daughter and the Holy Spirit can sort of determine how much management responsibility she's ready to take on her own. The fact that she's an adult person, the truth is she's only in your home because she wants to be and probably needs to be. So the fact that she's there to this point means she wants you to help her manage some aspects of her life, okay, or she wouldn't be there at all, which is to your credit. So I think those are things you can talk about openly with her and with your husband. And you can only at this point, you got to move into more of an advisor role than an authority role. Do you know what I mean? Where it's kind of like, here's what we recommend to you. I remember when I was 17 or 18, there were some decisions that I was making. My father, I think he did something really wise. I was going to go to some places and do some things that he knew were going to be good for me. And he pulled me aside and said, you know, you're 17 years old. I'm not going to tell you that you can't do it. This time next year, you'll be in college. You'll be doing whatever you want. I'm just not going to tell you you can't do it. He said, but I'm going to tell you, I don't think it's wise. I think it's going to be bad for you spiritually. It's going to hurt your walk with God, hurt your reputation. And I think it's going to put you in some incredibly tempting situations that are going to prove really destructive to your heart. So I'm not going to tell you you can't do it, but I just want you to know you're probably going to do it. And when you go, whatever happens, I want you to remember what your dad told you. We pretty much ruined my whole weekend, because I did go. I did stay well out of trouble, honestly, just because every time there were things to do and places to do, my dad's words were in my ears. I don't think this is going to be very good for you. This is not wise. And I never really went anywhere like that again, because my dad gave me the freedom to be a man, make man decisions, but he told me exactly what he thought, and he gave me some really wise instruction. And I think the older kids get, the more you have to move into that role and then kind of take your hands off the wheel and then pick up the pieces if you have to. It's hard, isn't it? I know it is. I know some of you guys that have had, when we dismiss in a second, and already walked through some of that, might want to come speak into her life a little bit, because that's just ignorant advice. Some of you guys have lived experience. Hey, thank you guys for listening. If there's any way I can help you, feel free to email me, Facebook me, whatever. Direct message me on Twitter, whatever you want to do. I'd love to connect with you anytime, any way that I can help you or your church. Thank you guys.